Good evening, one and all. I was just talking to my guest. A few teething issues. Well, more like dentures than teething. The mixer that I've been using for the last 11 years, shall I say, shows you how old a version it was. We had an issue with it, and the new version that the people supplied didn't work. And I've got a previous one, which it looks like it's working, but hey, we don't know until I play it afterwards. But hopefully it's going out, and hopefully people can hear it. But anyway, this is me, Barry, with another book and a chat. Well, always said that when people have this sort of like a creative gene, whether it's that they paint, whether it's they sculpt, whether they write books, whether they can just sort of doodle stuff. But there is a gene that people can create, and it's often you find that somebody who's good at one sort of creative thing can come along and turn their hand to another. Well, my guest today, she's a bit like that, because, well, let's talk to her first and we can find out more about it. Because on the show today, I have the one and only E.G. Creel, or as I'm going to call her, Eva. Hi, Eva, how are you doing?
Barry, it's so good to be here today. Thank you very much. I'm well.
Well, you'd be glad to know that the lights are lighting up when you talk. So that's a good sign. As I said, I mean, you sort of never really was going to go into the writing world. Photography is your sort of vocational type thing. But what about when you were younger? Did you sort of jot down stories as soon as you could hold a crayon?
Oh, no, not at all. Writing was something I tripped over by accident last year. And I never had an aspiration or a goal. I didn't even think I had the skill set to be able to write. I started reading very late in fifth grade, and I had the learning disability of dyslexia.
Yep.
I'm still dyslexic, and so, you know, I didn't think that you could have asked me to be a politician or something. I would have believed that before anyone said that you're going to write a novel this year in 6 weeks.
Right.
I think it was a big surprise to me. I'm very elated, and I Googled other authors that are also dyslexic, and it turned out Agatha Christie was the big one.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Dyslexic. Yeah, and I had no idea. And after I read that, you know, she sold 4 of them.
And
I thought, how dare I lie to myself and say I can't do something?
Churchill, and who was the other one? H.G. Wells, I think it was. They had one form or another, and it's interesting because I cannot spell. I read all the time when I was younger, and my spelling, thank goodness for spell check these days, that's all I can say. And it's even more complicated when I'm spelling half in English and half in American, which is a lot of difference, I can tell you.
All those extra vowels.
Well, yeah, America just cut, we don't need those letters, let's throw them out. Let's, night, we don't need a G and an H in there, stick it out. Time, we'll put a Y in there, how it is. But the interesting thing is that much of that I wrote, I read and stuff like that, I never thought I'd manage to write anything because of the spelling thing. But I've always counted myself more as a verbal, as a storyteller. And I guess, like yourself, I mean, I used to write little short, well, not like yourself, but I used to write little short stuff, poems, and then onto sort of songs, and then onto sort of short romance stories, like, 5-10 minutes read. And then one year I thought, okay, I'm going to write a book this year. And this was in the days when you actually got a lunch hour, not like these days where it's a lunch 5 minutes if you're lucky sort of thing. During my lunch hour at work, I sort of wrote like the short stories. I wrote short chapters. So I sort of did it like that. And like yourself, with the COVID and stuff like that being restricted, you wrote it yourself. But would you say 6 weeks, something like that? That was pretty good going.
Yeah, 6 weeks. I have a discipline, a daily discipline, where I take a photo every day of my life. It's usually of my kids or a self-portrait. Mm-hmm. And that's my way of being a lazy journalist, of having my memories pop up in my Facebook. And I make a yearbook at the end of the year as well, where I include most of the images. So I had this daily discipline that also transferred over. I have time to take a picture every day, I also have time to write every day.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
It's needed to make it a rule.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying, though. It is the fact that you were able, through your photography, to learn, or to force yourself is perhaps not the right word, but to... Force yourself to...
You want to. You do them because you make yourself.
Make yourself do it.
Every day.
Yep.
Yeah, you write every day.
Yep.
It just becomes a rule. It's not a goal. You don't have a choice.
No. But it's good that you managed to do that. And it's, you know, as I said, the creative part coming across. But when it came down to your story, it was led to by a nightmare, wasn't it?
It was. I had very vivid dreams. I still have vivid dreams. I have night terrors as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And this was specifically one. There was a mass murder happening, and I took refuge in a library, and there were all these books on the shelf, but they were the same story written in different languages. And there was a man sitting there very calm, so I immediately knew he was in on it. He knew what was happening. And I was trying to plead with him to stop killing people, and he said, oh, you know, don't worry about it. It's already done. And I couldn't help but think, you know, he was just waiting for me to leave the library so I could join the rest of the people. And so to stall, I took one of the books off the shelf and started to pretend to read it, but it was in Portuguese. And he says, you know, so let me know what you think. And I'm just staring at a page. And, you know, in your dream, you can't really read anyway. And I was just kind of pretending to read his story to stall. And then when I woke up, I thought, oh, man, this was amazing. Who is this guy? Who could he be? And then it began evolving.
Mm.
And so I started with just a paragraph, and that paragraph turned into 46,000 words,
right,
which is a short novel or
right,
a long novella, depending who you want to argue with. But
right,
it's mine, and it's good.
Exactly. And it's called The Immortal. Is that correct?
That's right. The Immortal. Life or death, the choice is hers.
Wow. There's
a double title there because there's a lot of immortals out there.
Right.
The original of a title. But I just had to put something on there, you know, and move forward.
It's totally different use of your creative genes, if you like, going from photography, where your eye is sharing the story via the picture that you take, to an author where you're painting that picture with words. Did you sort of have any issues going from one to the other? Not if you did it in 6 weeks, I don't think.
It was surprisingly easy. It just kind of vomited out of me. It came out like a creative
yep,
explosion. And then when I was done, I was so hungover by the whole thing. I was motion sickness. I couldn't look at a computer screen anymore. I had to buy special glasses that filtered out the blue light because I'd gotten such a migraine from staring at the screen for such a long time. And then I needed to take a vacation away from it. I needed to just step back for a while and give myself a chance to calm down from what just happened. It was all very dramatic.
Right. I can imagine. I fully understand, because when it just flows, the story just flows, and as you say, vomit out is exactly right. I mean, you have to just go with it. You can't say I'm gonna have a coffee break now. Your fingers are still flying, your brain's going quicker and your fingers can type and everything like that. I pick up some of my stories and read them, and I think, I don't remember writing that. That's not words I'd use. Did you come to that?
Absolutely. I had a friend who said, oh, my son's so happy that you wrote about an Eric, and I didn't even remember the character. I wrote about an Eric. Yeah, and her son said, page 100 and whatever, and I had to get up and reread it. And I was like, oh.
It's crazy. About 4 or 5 years ago, I was going back home to England for a week visiting, and I was at the airport. And there was a delay in the flight, and I was, you know, wondering, bored about it. And I was taking a couple of books over with me for the family. And so I was sitting there for a sort of hour or so waiting for the flight to be de-iced, I think it was, something like that. I started reading it, and I'm laughing at the jokes, you know, at the humorous parts. I'm getting emotional at some of the sadness. And I think, well, you stupid idiot, you wrote it. You know it's not, you know it's going to have a happy ending.
Oh, yeah, I had myself a good cry fest. I would listen to the Beatles and be mopey for days on certain scenes. I still think about them and you know, get sentimental.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
that
wonderful.
A lot of people have. Interesting you've said that, because a lot of people do have, like, a playlist when they're writing that sort of puts them in the mood or whatever. So is that what you did? You had a lot of Beatles stuff?
No, I have complete chaos in the house. I have two small children.
And right.
They're constantly pulling at me when I'm trying to type, and I'm pretty much running around the house and daydreaming about what I want to write next, and then when I have a second, I go and just smash it as fast as I can on the keyboard. And so there's never quiet or time to think. But with this one specific scene, I did listen to, you know, the Beatles songs, and it just felt so good because I wanted my character to like music. And since he's an immortal, he was around during the time of the Beatles. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, this is research.
It could have been worse. It could have been worse. It could have been Baby Shark playing the whole time, you know.
But, you know, it's usually Blippi or what else? Wild Crap.
Yes. Oh, crikey. Okay, so what? Give us, without giving too much away, give us a rundown of the plot of The Immortal.
Right, so I think The Immortal is very relatable if you've lived a lackluster life. It's about Emma. She's 40 years old, and she has served others without really taking care of herself for her entire life. She kind of has a midlife crisis. I'm turning 40 this year as well, so I think if this is my midlife crisis, well, nobody told me it was going to be this much fun. And this was fun, too. She booked a vacation to the French Polynesias, and the vacation of a lifetime then turned into my nightmare, which is then her story of how she survived a horrific mass murder and ends up kind of like a piece of property to an immortal Viking.
Ah, okay. All right. So, I mean, is it aimed for children, or is it just a general fantasy, sort of contemporary fantasy book?
It's a contemporary fantasy for adults.
That's what I thought, yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought.
It has mature content.
There you go, mature content. It's like, I can remember somebody on one of mine saying this. Somebody said, oh, there's sort of one bit in the book that you might not want children to read. And then somebody else in a review says it's a good Christian book. So I was confused. And I read through it. And the only bit I found was right near the front when my sort of hero, Fred, he's a sort of a teen. He sort of comes to America because his parents end up going to Australia. Long story, but... Like, I know when I first came over here, you get to the first set of traffic lights and see people turning right on red. And he's, you know, half a seat, says, bloody hell, you know. And that's the only thing I think in the book that I could find, but it was, you know, you might not want your children to read that. I remember my mother, she used to say, oh, crikey. Blood is in the Bible, blood is in the book. If you don't bloody believe it, take a bloody look. Something like that. She used to say, she said, we're allowed to say that word.
In a forum a while ago, somebody was arguing, saying that they needed to have, you know, warnings or something in the books. And I said, there's no warning on the Bible, there's no warning on anybody's
book. Well, I had that with my short romance stories, because I before that I wrote short romance stories, and you know, they're in a book called The Bathroom Book of Romance, because it's like 5-10 minutes read, and that might be the only place you get 5-10 minutes peace and quiet. And I used to do them sort of like online, about one a month or something like that. And I, you know, I had to send them out to people, bit of a following built up and stuff like that. And anyway, I got a message from a lady from Toronto one day, and she said, you did it to me again. And I thought, what the heck? And she says, I got to work. She says, my makeup is all running down my face. She says, my eyes are all red. She says, you've got to warn us if it's a bit of a weepy when you do the story. So when I put them in the book, all the weepies, I put a little box of Kleenex tissues next to each title when it was a weepy. So people knew.
That's really sweet.
But it's
beautiful.
You have to know, you know, and it's, I guess it's like you said, you know, to let people know what they're getting into. Some people, you know, oh my goodness, I turned to this page and I was totally shocked. Yeah, okay. What do you expect?
It's right. It's
of course it is. Of course it is.
It's not. Now, even Disney movies have a little shock in them.
Oh, too right. Too right. I remember crying my eyes out when Bambi's mother died. Oh, crikey.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, one of the things, and I read you a review where you were saying about this as well, is I get a lot of people on the show, a lot of debut authors on the show, and they think that, a lot of them think, you know, well, I've written it, they get the, you know, the books come through in the post or whatever, you know, and you've got sitting there with your copies in your hand, you think, that's it, I've done all the hard work, that's it, you know, the book's written, it's out there and everything. I tell them, that's when the hard work starts. People don't believe it, but it's true, isn't it? It's once it's written and ready to, you know, now it out there in the, for the public, that's where you really have to get down to working.
It's, you know, the thing is, talent doesn't sell.
Yep.
I know that for the last 20 years as being a photographer, and my work is above average. But if you don't know how to be a salesperson, your book is going to sit in your closet, and that's all it's going to do.
Yep.
It's about knowing how to sell, value yourself, and know how to knock on doors and not be afraid of those doors not opening and going. You have to be a vacuum salesman.
Yeah, no, it's true. And value yourself is something, you know, I'm glad you said that, because it's something a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't have faith in themselves. You get people who sort of, well, I've, I remember this one lady written a book, and she was sort of reading it to, you know, to the group of people, you know, who were going through as on a sort of weekly basis on what's happening and everything. And it was quite a good story, quite a good little story. But she went to a writer's seminar, and there was this person there, and they said, oh, when you write this, you've got to write it in this tense, and you've got to do it in this, and you've got to do it in that. And she went home, and she said, oh, I haven't done it like they said. I've got to rewrite it all, and rewrote it all. And then 6 months later down the line, she went to another one, and somebody else said something different. So by the time the books came out, there wasn't any, yeah, you know, there was hardly any of her in it. You've got to have faith in yourself. You know, nobody else is going to half the time. But if you've got faith in yourself,
it's your soup, you're going to eat it. You make sure it's
exactly,
like it.
Exactly. Now you've got this first one out the way. Do you think the bug's bitten? Do you reckon there's going to be another one, or you just got it out your system?
Yeah, I got it done, and then I told my husband I'm not doing that again. And he just kind of looked at me and said, yeah, right, and walked off. And then not even a week later, I started talking about, I said, what if, you know, I have this idea of a shadow that's not really a shadow, that's magical, and you're usually born with a twin, but if there isn't a twin, then, you know, what if this magical land, and he goes, uh-huh, write it down.
I mean,
I ended up
writing
novellas now on novellas. So like you did, short stories, short episodic, usually around 600-700 words, so real quick read.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been doing now.
Well, I found that also helped with writing the bigger book, because I wrote like a Saturday morning cinema serial, you know, so that you did the short stuff and you left hooks at the end of each chapter, you know.
Yes.
Come next week and see what happened, you know, will they get run over by the railway, yeah, right, by the train and stuff like that. And I think that helps in a sort of action-y type book. Obviously sort of romance stuff and stuff like that, you're painting more, the words are sort of expressing things a bit more. But when you want people and they turn a page turner, then I think that's great. And I think it's good when you write the smaller books, because you're forced to compress down to something that people can sit and read. And I think that's
exactly.
Great.
It's like buying condensed orange juice. You can buy the gallon of it, but it's 80% water. Or right. You can just get the condensed orange juice and add your own.
Totally right. So what did your husband think when he read the book? I assume he's read it.
He loved it. Yeah. He did read it. He read it, and I read it to him while I was writing. But then he started getting mad at me because I was changing stuff, and he said, just tell me when it's done so I can read it so I know what's happening, because I'm going down all these different roads, and
yep.
I don't know which direction you went, right?
Right.
When he was done, it took him he's a real slow reader, but it only took him 3 days to read it.
That's not bad.
And he was laughing out loud, and that was just the best feeling.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't it, I mean, it's like the business with the tears. If you've done a book and you see people laughing, this you can't ask for anything more. Yeah. Oh, it's terrific when it gets like that.
Ask for a review.
Yeah.
You laugh, because you can't tell people about it, thank you.
Yeah. Just don't put your, use another name, please. Yeah.
Yeah, don't say my wife.
Yeah, exactly. the thing with, obviously, with the book and the characters and being sort of so rapid in sort of evolving, yeah, the book evolving with yourself. Did you have time to get to know the characters? Did you have some? See, I always say that, you know, you end up that some minor ones were major roles, and you know, some. I had a lady who, and I've told this story a few times on the show. She was like a historical romance writer, and this was like a 23rd or 24th book, and we were talking about this sort of thing. And she was saying that the book she'd just written, she tried to kill this character off 6 times. The character wouldn't die, so she had to go back and rewrite the whole thing so that the character didn't die. Did you find some of your characters sort of pushing their way to the front of the story?
I had a character exactly like that. He starts off, he's kind of the Han Solo of the story, and he starts off as a not a very nice character. And I had at the very beginning written his death scene. And then all of a sudden he evolved, and he became something so unexpected, and then I was like, oh man, you know, and for me to think that I could kill him off was just a joke. He was way above such.
I can just imagine the character saying, "I'll teach her to write me off."
Yeah, really. I mean, he's been living a lot longer than me.
Yeah.
I am.
Oh, crikey. Okay, so you've got this new book in the pipeline, and your book, which The Immortal, is out now. What sort of response have you received from it?
Surprisingly, very positive. I'm waiting for the shoe to drop and somebody to give me a 1-star and say this is baloney. I mean, thanks for the 1-star. You know, you took the time to hate it. That's great. But the hate hasn't come in yet, so I know I haven't reached a real level of success until that happens.
Right. Well, I don't know. I mean, I think you should always, especially starting off, you should always read all the reviews, good or bad, because there are times where somebody picks up, and I had this with mine, where I had 2 chapters, it's after about 50 reviews, and somebody wrote, by the way, did you know that chapter 11 and chapter 15 basically start off the same? And I looked, and they did. You know, same sort of thing going on, but slightly different words. And literally, I contacted the publisher, said, don't send any more out, we need to fix this. But you get other people.
Right.
I
tried to contact them and say, hey, would you like to be a beta reader?
Right. Well, this is it. I'd had people reading it. I'd have editing done and everything like that. And
people missed it.
I mean, the thing is, if you get into a story.
Yeah, one of my friends just noticed that I misspelled the word tube twice. You have no idea how bad I want to just throw that book across the room.
I can believe it. But the thing is, it just shows you, you know, because my view is that if you start reading, you actually get into the story, you've got to force yourself to stop, to spell check and, you know, and to check the story, because people are just, they're into the story, which Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, I guess it's a bad thing if they're meant to be checking it out for you, sort of thing. But I think you should.
I mean, my editor didn't see it. My formatter didn't see it.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I didn't see it, but there it was, you know, right there. And I guess that's why we call them printing mistakes.
Exactly. But hey, as long as people enjoy the story, that's my view. And they, from the
set.
Exactly.
Really have. And I mean, it's really written for. It's a woman's point of view. It's a 40-year-old protagonist. I'm not sure a lot of men would really get into the story, but you know what? How I'm not to say.
There you
but
go.
A few men have read it, and I've been very pleasantly surprised that they've enjoyed it.
What?
Because there is a lot of action and adventure in there. There's, you know, I think a lot of them have told me, too, that it would make a great film someday.
There you
Maybe
go.
Maybe that's the next thing. Maybe I'll take a screenwriting class and go.
Yeah, a lot of people. I've had quite a few authors who have gone on to doing that. I've had a few the other way around, people who actually started off as screenwriters and then went in to become authors, but it's normally the first way around. Anyway, time is running out, as it always does. And interestingly enough, I've got great big numbers now on this new this new mix of things, so I can actually see the time in seconds. So anyway, what I'm going to do now, Eva, is hand the show to you so that you can tell everybody where people can find more about you and, of course, your book.
Hello, my lovelies. It is now time to take over the show. Mwah-ah-ah-ah. So if you just Google E.G. Creel, evil, good, Creel, like a C-R-E-E-L, then I'm sure all the things will pop up, but I'm on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can download my book on Google Books. I'm on Goodreads, Facebook. I'm in the places.
Yeah. The ones that count.
The places you would look, you would find me. Yeah. It's not difficult. If you would like to come over for a cup of tea, I'm near Augusta, Georgia. How do you take your tea, Barry?
I take British tea, and I don't mean the posh tea like Earl Grey and stuff like that, the normal everyday tea.
A bit of cream.
No, never. Never. That's American.
No, it is not.
Yeah, milk.
You know how to have a British cuppa, and you put a little bit of milk, and you put 1.5 spoons of sugar. 2 was too much, 1 was not enough.
Ah, okay. No, PG Tips is the number one tea in England, the everyday tea, and I managed to get that, and I have it with milk and sugar, as you say, but going to these
in
places.
In the microwave, right?
Nah, yeah, of course, yeah. In the frying pan. Now, that is. I actually had to do it in a saucepan last week because the electric kettle broke. But I got a fresh one within like 3 hours.
And if anyone wants to find me on Kindle Vella, it's currently still a beta and only in the US. Sorry, I forgot about that.
Okay.
But you can find me on there as well. Just Amazon, put in E.G. Creel and the Vella story should pop up. Or Kindle Vella is now also available on Android.
Okay, well, Eva, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. It's been really good chatting to you. And perhaps when your next book comes out, you'll come back and chat to us again.
Yes, that sounds like a plan.
Okie doke. Well, thank you very much. There you go. My guest today, E.G. Creel, C-R-E-E-L. And been talking about a debut book called The Immortal. Lots of people enjoying it, I'm telling you. I think this lady's gonna be equally good as writing as she is with her photographs. Well, that's it. I'll be back on Sunday with my music shows between 5 and 6. Those are the days. Music from the 20th century. And the theme this week is horses. And that's followed between 6 and 7 p.m. That's Eastern on New Visions Radio or with the Swinging 60s. And, of course, we always end up with the Beatles on there, so Eva will be okay with that one. Anyway, that's it. Just, as always, one thing left to say. Don't forget.